Arizona News Radio, Dave Hendershot, the embattled top aide to Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio, has resigned days before his firing was supposed to take place. Meanwhile, citizens are voicing concerns about $100 million.
This is about Arpaio, but this is also about citizens. What are we willing to put up with?
Democratic State Senator Kyrsten Sinema says President Obama has shown his birth certificate.
These conspiracy folks didn't believe that a short-form birth certificate was good enough. So now he's given them the long-form birth certificate, and my hope is that they can go off and create a conspiracy theory about something else.
Phoenix firefighters monitoring a paper recycling plant that burst into flames yesterday.
Typically, we do fire checks about every hour. We'll send a truck over there to make sure the city is flared up, that type of thing.
Rangers at the Grand Canyon investigating how a man survived after dropping his car off the south rim of the canyon some 200 feet.
The investigation is occurring by the National Park Service, and a plan is being developed to remove the vehicle in the near future.
George Tanner, Arizona News Radio.
And this KFNX traffic report is brought to you by Sig Alert. Northbound on the 17 right at 19th Avenue on the on-ramp. You're going to find a collision there. There's also a medical emergency southbound on the Loop 101 at Glendale right at the exit ramp. And you're going to find another accident. This one's actually on the freeway eastbound on the 10 at 16th Street on the right shoulder. Now, we know rush hour is brutal going in and coming home. So before you get on the road, log on to SigAlert.com to track your commute and see the exact speeds along the way. That's SigAlert.com.
Jim Howell from the KFNX Weather Center. We're heading for our hot day of the week tomorrow with 97. And then it is a nice cool down into the weekend. Friday is 94. Partly cloudy Saturday and Sunday. Breezy to windy. Only mid to upper 80s. Jim Howell, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
And currently at our downtown studios, we're sitting at 86 degrees. Next news in 30 minutes. And when it breaks here on KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
Hello, everybody. I'm Bill Dance. I've been called America's best-known fisherman, but I'm also a proud Mahindra tractor owner. I recommend the Mahindra Red Tag Sale for big discounts on select Mahindra tractors this month only. Superior value is how Mahindra became the world's number one selling tractor. So hurry in to your Mahindra dealer and reel in a great deal during the Mahindra Red Tag Sale. Visit MahindraUSA.com for details.
Geico presents 15 Minutes to Save the Earth. I'm Tom Jeans with today's Earth-Saving Tip.
Aggressive driving may make you feel like you get to your destination sooner, but it wastes a lot of gas. For every 5 miles per hour over 60, you'll be using an extra 7% more gas, so stay safe while improving gas mileage.
That's 15 minutes to help save the Earth and save you money. Want to save more money? Call Geico at 1-800-947-AUTO or visit geico.com, where 15 minutes could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
This is Legalese, where the law is always on your side. Now introducing your host, a longtime veteran of the courts, Dennis Willinchek.
Well, it's 4:06 and we're here as we are every week. It's Wednesday, so we're here. 4 to 5, leading into the Lou Dobbs Show. This is Dennis Willinchek, trial lawyer in Phoenix for some 34 years. And I'm your host, and we have Jack Willinchek, who's my son, who works in our law firm as well, here. And we have a guest today that we're going to be talking with the first half hour of our show, talking about clean elections and other related issues and things going down at the legislature, which is now just out of session. But we have honored to have Representative David Shapira. And David, you're from Tempe, is that right?
I am now, and I'm in the Senate. I'm in the Senate now as well, so I'm a senator.
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I'm sorry.
Little update
right
on the bio.
Yeah. Somebody gave me that, and I read it without thinking.
That's okay.
So it just goes to show you. Well, tell us about that. You started out as a representative, obviously. That part was right, but was that in 07?
Yeah, I was elected in 06, so I was sworn in January of 07 to the House and was elected just this last year to the Senate. And
congratulations.
The day after being elected to the Senate was chosen by my Democratic colleagues to be the leader of our caucus, the minority leader.
Well, congratulations on that. That's fantastic. I think a lot of our listeners, including me, obviously, need to know a little bit more about the legislature and about the Senate as well as the House. Why don't we start, if we can, though, talking a little bit about your background. I'm always curious how someone as young as you, and I can say because we're on the radio that you look a lot younger than I do anyway, But how old are you?
I'm 31, and I'm actually the youngest member of the state senate.
Yeah, that's fantastic. It really is, and I think you're an inspiration, really, to young people. Jack here being one of them. And so, tell us how you got into politics.
Well, I was born and raised here in the state, and so you know, obviously, had followed politics. Not obviously, but I had followed politics when I was younger. My grandmother was very active in politics. My mom was very active in politics, and so
what were their names?
My grandmother, Edith Shapira, she goes back to working on Art Hamilton's first campaign.
Oh,
And my mom really was just kind of an active participant. You know, she volunteered a lot. Neither of them were ever in public office or ran for public office or anything, but they were, you know, they were good electoral participants, you know.
Yeah. So you saw that growing up.
My mom took me out knocking on doors for Terry Goddard when he ran for governor the first time back in 1990. And, you know, just kind of caught the political bug a little bit back then, just having an interest in it, but wanted to be a doctor all the way through high school, until end of my junior year, started my senior year, decided I wanted to be involved in politics. And so, went and studied politics at George Washington University in DC, worked on Capitol Hill. I worked for, John McCain, was actually my first, employer in politics.
Now, were you a Democrat at the time?
Always been a Democrat, but,
well, that's kind of interesting that he hired you.
Yeah, John McCain was, went back when he was a little bit more mavericky and, you know, a little bit more moderate, I think in most people's view. He was also very focused at the time on an issue that was important to me, was really the most important issue to me at the time, which was campaign finance reform. And I felt a lot of the ills, a lot of the problems in American politics could be fixed if we dealt with our campaign finance issues. And he agreed, obviously, and he didn't agree with me. I agreed with him.
Well, he was
on his policy.
That was the time one of the
McCain-Feingold.
That's right. Yeah.
And so anyway, I worked in his Senate office during that time, and that was really my focus. And so my dad knew Senator McCain and had talked with him about me working there possibly. And I sent a letter to the senator and was able to get an internship in his office. Worked in Washington for a few years, but actually finished my time.
You were one of those guys that takes people around for the tour.
No,
right?
No, I never got to do the tour. I was actually the press intern, so I worked in the press office. I my fingers were covered in newspaper ink all day long.
Yeah.
I basically skimmed the newspapers like we used to do in the old days and cut them out and made photocopies and distributed in the office. That was my job.
Yeah.
But I finished my time in Washington actually working on my side of the aisle for Senator Tom Daschle, who when I started working there was the minority leader and then became the majority leader after Senator Jeffords switched to become an independent.
And you worked on Goddard's campaign for attorney general, is that right?
I did. When I came back to Arizona, I started off actually teaching high school. I taught high school for a year back at my old high school. And then the very next election year, decided I wanted to get back involved, reengaged in political stuff, and had a friend who knew Terry Goddard, went over to his house and talked to him for 45 minutes. And at the end of the conversation where I thought he was going to let me put up some signs or stuff some envelopes, he offered me the job to run his campaign.
Yeah, that's pretty wild.
And so I ran his race in 2002, and we were able to get him elected and reelected again in 06.
Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. One of the things I noted on a personal level is that it said that you were a cancer survivor. Is that accurate?
Yeah, I actually had a very rare form of cancer. I was born with cancer. I was born with a congenital melanoma, and I know they can't see it over the radio, but I have a scar on the left side of my face from various surgeries that I had throughout my childhood, and was very privileged, actually, to I've been cancer-free now for 17 years, or actually, I'm sorry, 19 years.
Congratulations.
Going on 20 years. And I'm pretty proud of that. But I had the privilege and the opportunity to also work with the American Cancer Society, doing some community development work with them, which was a really incredible opportunity to meet people who, unlike me, were not born with cancer. You know, that was all I knew growing up. I just knew that I had to deal with this issue, and it seemed normal to me. Didn't realize how rare it was. But had the opportunity with the Cancer Society to meet people who were not in that similar experience, but you know, who were diagnosed later in life and had to deal with a lot of the issues that come with facing cancer, which pretty much, if we all live long enough, we all will face cancer at some point in our lives.
Yeah, well, I would imagine that has to have an effect or impact on your life in some way.
It does.
Hopefully in a positive way. But, you know, tell me, maybe part of that experience led to your political involvement, but so what got you actually started then running for yourself? You said you worked for Terry Goddard's campaign as a manager of his campaign. So what was it that propelled you to take the next step?
You know, it's interesting. I wasn't one of those poli-sci majors in college. It was like, I'm going to run for office someday and let me do what I can to, you know, to get elected to public office. I thought I would support people or work in government or whatever. You know, I thought I'd work on Capitol Hill or work for the legislature or do something kind of behind the scenes until I became an educator. And when I became a teacher, I realized, first of all, it changed my worldview and really my priorities in life. And whereas my priority had been politically had been campaign finance reform, it became education after
being
an educator.
Was that your major in college?
It was political science, yeah. It was, but again, just kind of thought I'd be behind the scenes. But after I became a teacher, my first year back here in Arizona,
where did you teach?
I taught at North Canyon High School in North Phoenix. It used to be Paradise Valley High School. Yeah. Maybe makes it more familiar. Yeah. But anyway, what I really learned was that there are some systemic problems with education in this state that, I could address for my students. I could address for the 155 kids I saw a day in that one subject. But there were things that needed to change, in the state as a whole in education. And I knew that behind the scenes, I could help a person get elected or help someone behind the scenes. But if I wanted to have as much impact as I had intended to have at that point in my life in education, and I had the tools, I had the skill set to go run for office and to work hard and to knock on doors and talk to voters and develop a message and to develop a campaign, if I had the tools to do it, I felt responsible to do it. And so I did some research and found that the legislature is really the place that has the most impact on what happens in education in our state. A lot of people think school boards do. I'm on a school board now as well, and I can tell you school boards certainly have an impact. But the legislature holds the purse strings. The legislature sets most of the policies we implement in our schools.
I see.
And so I decided back then that I wanted to, when I was old enough, run for the legislature. Unfortunately, I was only 21 when I started teaching high school. So I had to wait till I was 25. It's how old you have to be in Arizona to run. And so the first election I was old enough, which was when I was 26 in 2006, I ran for the House of Representatives.
And you won that election.
I did. And I ran against a person from the opposite party who had been in the legislature for 10 years in a district where her party had the registration advantage. And I was successful.
What do you attribute that to? Was it just going door to door or what?
Obviously
you didn't have a lot
things.
Of money to run, I would think.
No, I didn't. I ran as a clean elections candidate, which I think is appropriate for our conversation for the day.
Well, we're going to lead into that.
But what I did was, two things. I felt like I had better ideas. And at the end of the game, I think politics should be about who has the better ideas, who's going to make the better decisions in policy. And I think that was a big part of it. But I was good at getting those ideas out to the voters. And so I did. I knocked on 7,000 doors that election, and I outworked all my opponents. There were 8 candidates running in that election.
Wow.
And I outworked them and was able to get elected.
Wow, that's incredible. We are going to be talking, and we're going to take a break shortly, but we are going to be coming back and asking you specifically about your position on clean elections and again, why you come to the position that you are at because of the experience you personally had as a young man getting started and running for office, as you just described for us. And then I also want to talk to you in the show for the next segment on why we have such contention, why we can't, as many people think, just get along and get things done. I mean, just today we saw President Obama on TV saying, hey, look, here's my birth certificate, whatever you think about that, but here's my birth certificate, enough, let's move on to the issues that really we need to address instead of these contentious issues that really don't accomplish much. So when we come back from the break, and we'll be talking to the Senate Minority Leader, David Shapira, who's here with us in the studio. And this is Dennis Wolinchek on Legalese, and we'll be back shortly.
Since 1991, the law offices of Wolinchek & Bartness have provided quality business litigation service that you'd find at a big firm with small firm atmosphere. Wolinchek & Bartness specialize in cases of breach of contract, real estate litigation, construction defect, business fraud, and breach of fiduciary duty. For professional yet very personal legal representation, call Wolinchek & Bartness today at 602-606-2810, 602-606-2810.
The Lou Dobbs Show, returning this country to the American people, 1 hour at a time, Monday through Friday starting at 5, right here on KFNX, and streaming live at 1100KFNX.com.
Hey, this is Sully from The Big Biz Show. Join me and Russ T. Nails on KFNX AM 1100 this Monday at 12 p.m. We're going to break down business for you, but we're going to do it in an entertaining way. In the meantime, check out our website, bigbizshow.com, so you can find out what we're talking about. This Monday, 12 p.m., KFNX AM 1100.
Attention timeshare owners. Frustrated with your timeshare? Do not pay your next bill until you talk to us. We can close on your timeshare today. Call us at 888-888-1315 to see how we can help you. Direct Transfers has helped thousands of timeshare owners escape increasing maintenance fees, assessment fees, and even mortgage payments. Our timeshare experts are in your area right now to meet with you, or by phone 7 days a week. Don't wait. Appointment times fill up fast. So call 888-888-1315 right now to set up an appointment. That's 888-888-1315. Our services are 100% guaranteed, and for a limited time, we'll pay your 2011 maintenance fees. Call right now at 888-888-1315. That's 888-888-1315. Maintenance fee rebates are for customers only. Customers are those doing business with us. $500 max rebate per customer. Not all timeshares qualify. Contact company for details.
This is Dennis Wilenchek, and we're on Legalese. I'm here with Jack Wilenchek, and we're talking to the Senate Minority Leader, the highest-ranking Democrat in our state, I believe. Isn't that right, David?
Yeah, at this point, if you don't count the Corporation Commission, which most people don't, at this point, as the ranking Democrat in the legislature, that would be true.
Yeah, and also you're the youngest Senate Minority Leader that I can think of. Is that right?
Yeah, I don't think there's been any younger. I know, of course, that I'm the youngest senator at this point.
Yeah.
And I think when I was first elected, Art Hamilton, who was elected younger than me, told me that I was the third youngest to have been elected at that
time.
Whatever
happened to Art Hamilton, by the way?
What's that? I'm
sorry. Whatever happened to Art Hamilton?
Oh, he's still around. He's still, you know, he's still working behind the scenes. And, you know,
is he lobbying or something?
He is not incredibly actively. I mean, he's with a firm, and so he does, you know, he does policy work. But, you know, the guy's still sharp, knows the stuff.
Yeah, very much. Let me ask you a couple of quick questions. We have about 10 minutes. First, I want to ask you, before we lead into the clean elections issue directly, about the role of lobbyists. Has that been a surprise to you in terms of your experience down there?
You know, I think people recognize that lobbyists have power, and I think people make assumptions that lobbyists have a lot of control, and frankly, their assumptions are true.
Mm-hmm.
And more so in Arizona than a lot of places, and I think there's a few reasons for that. One is we have very loose lobbying restrictions, if any. Two is because of term limits. You have lobbyists who've been there for 30 years, but you don't have any legislators who've been there that long.
So they rely on people.
Yeah, that's right. And so, you know, when it comes down to institutional knowledge and relying on people for information, lobbyists are relied on more than legislators are, which is sad. The other is there's a fairly low barrier, fairly low threshold to entry for the legislature as far as finances are concerned. In some states, you know, legislative races are millions of dollars. In Arizona, you can get elected for $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, and that gives lobbyists quite a bit of power when they can essentially fund an entire legislative race.
Well, and let's talk about that, because as I said, we wanted to talk about clean elections, and later on, we're going to have David Burnell Smith on, who's also a senator from the Cave Creek area.
He's a representative, yeah.
Oh, is he a representative? Mm-hmm. I thought he was a state senator.
You got to switch. That's what the problem is.
they switched it on me. But in any event, he is someone who I think has a different point of view than you do. So we're going to be hearing from him. But having said that, and the point that you just made about the cost of these races, because really most of these legislative races, whether it's representative or the Senate, as you say, it's a pretty low threshold of entry, and which is, as you say, different than other states. But if it's so low, why is it then that we need clean elections, in your opinion?
Well, I frankly think that's part of the reason. Because of that low threshold and because lobbyists do have so much power in their ability to, you know, essentially get a person elected if they want to, given the low cost, I think it's good to have a system set up where people can run without having to rely on lobbyists to get elected. I've run as a clean elections candidate for three straight elections. Unfortunately, this next election, I've decided I'm probably going to have to run traditional because of some of the changes that have come in clean elections, including the stay of the matching funds provision.
Let's talk about that, too, because I think there's a lot of confusion on that. Why don't you explain to listening audience what that's all about.
Well, if I'll give kind of like a 30-second rundown of Clean Elections. Essentially, Clean Elections is a system by which you can get funding from a state commission that will pay for your campaign. It's about $40,000 if you combine the primary and general election. In order to qualify, you have to collect $220 or $235 contributions from people who live in your district. Turn those into the state. The state gives you money to run your campaign.
But aren't lobbyists instrumental in getting those as well?
Not necessarily. No. I mean, I guess you could theoretically use a lobbyist for helping you with that, but
you
frankly,
don't find that happens.
No, I don't think I've seen that happen too often. Again, those $5 contributions have to be from people in your district. So the lobbyist would have to have connections in your district to a large number of people, and it's really not high dollar amounts that are helpful. It's you can only collect $5. So,
they don't arrange to have people running out, because I know on signatures sometimes they do.
I would say more so in statewide races. Where you can get those $5 contributions from anywhere in the state. But in legislative races, it'd be very difficult for a lobbyist to be helpful in collecting those $5 contributions.
Okay. So anyway,
probably get in the way more than anything. So, and then the way it works, you get that amount of money, and then if your opponent runs the old fashioned way where they can raise money from lobbyists and whoever else, and then they outfund or outspend you in your election, you would receive matching funds from the Clean Elections Commission to help pay for that difference. Or if any outside group spent money against you or on behalf of your opponent, you would receive matching funds. Okay. So two things.
That is the current law.
That's the way it's in the Constitution right now, but that matching funds provision has been enjoined by the Supreme Court of the United States. Because they're considering whether, you know, what the merits are on that issue. Unfortunately, they made that decision to enjoin it in the middle of the election cycle last year. So those of us who had decided to run clean halfway through, the rules of the game changed. And so, you know, all of a sudden, instead of baskets being worth 2 points, they were worth 30 points. You know, it's just, they changed the rules on us in the middle of the game, which was, I think, pretty unfair to do. And it really affected me and a couple other people, I think, more significantly than just about anyone else, because I had an opponent who was running traditional, and my opponent outraised me and outspent me 2.5 to 1. So I would have received matching funds up to a certain point.
That was stopped.
But because matching funds was stopped in the middle of the election cycle, I didn't get any matching funds for that, and I had to go through that campaign without being able to raise or spend any additional money beyond my $40,000 up against someone who had outraised and spent me 2.5 to 1. One important note on clean elections that I think people need to know, because there's a popular misconception out there that this is taxpayer money. Clean elections is not, I repeat, not funded by taxpayer dollars. Clean Elections is funded by fees and fines, by donations, but not a penny of income tax, sales tax, property tax dollars. No tax dollars go into paying for Clean Elections. And by the way, Clean Elections has run a surplus every year since it's existed and has actually contributed money back to the state general fund to help us balance our budgets.
Well, as I understand it, there was also – I'll try to find it – but there was also a poll taken, as I understand it, that reflected that most people are in favor of the clean elections for just that reason. But there is a lot of misinformation about it, as you say, and I think most people who are opposed to it are of the opinion that it is taxpayer money. And so that's an important point to get out there. There was a poll, I'm looking at a report from the Republic on April 18th, that a poll commissioned by supporters of the public campaign finance law indicate support for the law, which lawmakers are looking to repeal. And it hinted that 52% of those polled supported the measure, but a hefty number, it said, 42% indicated they were undecided. Obviously, that poll was taken by people in support, but
it's all about how you word it.
It's all how you word it.
Because what it comes down to is the opponents of clean elections are trying to put a referendum on the ballot, which says we want to ban publicly financed campaigns, leading taxpayers to believe that it's taxpayer money that's funding it, which isn't true. Yes, it's a public entity, but it's not taxpayer dollars paying for clean elections. So it just depends on how you ask the question. If you say, are you in favor of publicly financed campaigns? They say, no, we don't like them. Are you in favor of clean elections? Oh, yeah, we support clean elections.
Sure, I agree. Apparently, what you're referring to, as I understand it, was a story appeared on April 19th that Arizona lawmakers have approved a measure that will ask voters whether the state should do away with its public campaign funding system. It's the article, at least, indicated that the Senate had voted on April 18th to place on the November 2012 ballot a referendum that would amend the Constitution to bar use of public money for candidates' campaigns. Now, when they say public money, Is that how it's worded?
Yeah, it just means it's a public entity that has the money. But, again, I think it's misleading because it makes people think that that's taxpayer dollars when you talk about public money.
Yeah.
But because it's a public entity, even though a lot of the money comes from donations and fees and fines on candidates and other sources that are not taxpayer dollars, it leads voters to believe that it's taxpayer money. The other unfortunate thing about that bill, it was or the resolution, yeah, was SCR 1025. What's really unfortunate about that is the Senate president waited to have that bill voted on until last Monday evening, which was the start of Passover. And so I actually had to leave to go to my family Seder. He had made a commitment to me that the three bills remaining on the counter would not be voted on. So unfortunately, I didn't get to vote against that bill because I had to leave for my family Seder.
I was going to ask you that because I noted, actually, in doing some research, that it was indicated that you – it said we're not available for the vote. So now you've explained that.
Yeah.
So obviously we know how you would have voted.
I would have voted no.
Yeah.
Certainly.
Would that have made any difference?
No. In fact, no votes never make a difference on any final vote on a bill. It's only yes votes that matter, frankly.
Yeah.
But I would have liked to have been on the record as against that bill because a lot of the Friends of Clean Elections are upset with me now because they feel like I abandoned them vote. And
yeah,
now I have to go around and explain what happened.
Yeah. I understand. Well, you've got a good explanation. So, but, let's talk about quickly how many Republicans versus Democrats there are in the Senate.
There are 21 Republicans and 9 Democrats.
So in terms of your statement about the yes votes, it's pretty obvious that they're going to control things.
It's interesting on that issue. It's actually, for the most part, Republicans were supportive of SCR 1025, but there were no votes on the Republican side and there were yes votes on the Democratic side.
I saw that. I think Linda Lopez, I think.
Uh-huh, that's correct.
Yeah. So it didn't go strictly along party lines.
That's
obviously,
right.
But
it's people who benefit from clean elections. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah.
Is you know, if your opponent ran clean last time and you had a tough race because your opponent had clean elections funding, then you probably don't like clean elections.
All right, we'll be back. We have Senate Minority Leader David Shapiro with us, and we'll be back after these messages.
I'm Steve Malzberg. Listen to me from 1 to 3 every weekday afternoon on the 50,000-watt Voice of the Valley, KFNX, News Talk Radio 1100, Phoenix.
CNN Radio, I'm Shelby Lynn. Alabama is at the center of a severe tornado outbreak. Officials declared a tornado emergency in Jefferson County a short time ago, including Birmingham. And the death toll is climbing. Governor Robert Bentley.
We don't know exactly yet how many lives have been lost. Unconfirmed, we have at least 12 and possibly 13.
Emergency management officials are also reporting major damage on the west side of Birmingham. The UN Security Council was unable to reach an agreement again on a resolution condemning the Syrian government for a deadly series of crackdowns on unarmed protesters since March. It's unclear whether the birther movement is satisfied. President Obama released his Hawaii birth certificate today, hoping to prove once and for all he really was born in Hawaii. The most trusted name in news, this is CNN Radio.
Arizona News Radio, Dave Hendershot, the embattled top aide to Maricopa County Sheriff Joe Arpaio, has resigned days before his firing was supposed to take place. Meanwhile, citizens are voicing concerns about $100 million.
This is about our power, but this is also about citizens. What are we willing to put up with?
Democratic State Senator Kyrsten Sinema says President Obama has shown his birth certificate.
These conspiracy folks didn't believe that a short form birth certificate was good enough. So now he's given them the long form birth certificate, and my hope is that they can go off and create a conspiracy theory about something else.
Phoenix firefighters monitoring a paper recycling plant that burst into flames yesterday.
Typically, we do fire checks about every hour. We'll send a truck over there to make sure that anything is flared up, that type of thing.
Rangers at the Grand Canyon investigating how a man survived after dropping his car off the south rim of the canyon some 200 feet.
The investigation is occurring by the National Park Service, and a plan is being developed to remove the vehicle in the near future.
George Tanner, Arizona News Radio.
And this KFNX traffic report is brought to you by Cobblestone Auto Spa.
Eastbound on the 10, right at the 17, you're going to find an accident there. Outbound Grand Avenue east of the Loop 303, way out there, you're going to find a fender bender as well. And if you're traveling northbound of Black Canyon, you find a collision at Van Buren. Save time and money. Get any car wash and save 20 cents a gallon. The best car wash in town and save 20 cents a gallon. Cobblestone Auto Spa, cobblestoneautospa.com.
Jim Howell from the KFNX Weather Center. We're heading for our hot day of the week tomorrow with 97. And then it is a nice cool down into the weekend. Friday is 94. Partly cloudy Saturday and Sunday. Breezy to windy. Only mid to upper 80s. Jim Howell, KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
And currently at our downtown studios, we're sitting at 86 degrees. Next news in 30 minutes or when it breaks here on KFNX News Talk Radio, 1100.
Unbelievable. You're zapping me right into the Twilight Zone.
What's so hard to believe? That Lisa might want to marry me?
No, it's just that you're turning out to be way more romantic than I ever thought.
Yeah, well, I'm kind of surprising myself, too. But that's why I need your help. You know Lisa better than anyone. You know what she likes, what she doesn't, how she's going to react.
So what? You want me to tell you what she's going to say when you pop the question?
No, I want an engagement ring that she can't say no to.
Oh, well, that I can do. Let's go.
Where to? I don't want to run all over the city or spend every last dollar I have.
Well, then you came to the right person. Because if you're going for the gold, you got to go to the gold. London Gold.
For over 30 years, London Gold has been offering couples a wide array of diamond engagement and wedding rings that not only reflect the timeless beauty of their love, but an enduring value as well.
London Gold. It's the best.
It's always good to have someone you can depend on. If you're a homeowner age 62 or older who is considering a reverse mortgage, it's even better when that person has the knowledge and experience to help with your particular situation. You can find that person at MetLife Bank. Our reverse mortgage consultants are prepared to help you with every step in the loan process, from your initial questions through your loan closing. So if you're a homeowner age 62 or older, call MetLife Bank today. We'll help you determine if a reverse mortgage is right for you. MetLife Bank is a MetLife company, and MetLife has been a trusted name for more than 140 years. We'll be there when you need us.
Call Brian Bellamini, your local MetLife Bank reverse mortgage consultant, at 602-509-3366 to learn more. That's 602-509-3366. 602-509-3366.
All loans are subject to property approval. Certain conditions and fees apply. Mortgage financing provided by MetLife Bank, N.A., Equal Housing Lender.
This is Dennis Mullinchek, and we're back on Legalese every Wednesday from 4 to 5 leading into Lou Dobbs. And we're about to part company here with Senator David Shapiro, who's been good enough to be with us. And we're going to then talk with Representative David Brunell Smith from the Cave Creek area. But before we let you go, I just want to ask you one final question. David, as the head of the minority in the Senate, which has to be a tough job, obviously, everybody asks me lately these questions about, you know, what's going on with politics? Why can't these guys get along? You know, after the Gabrielle Giffords incident, we thought there was a glimmer of hope. Do you see it getting any better in the Senate, given where you're right in the vortex of it?
You know, it's interesting. Immediately after what happened in Tucson, in fact, that day, Senator Pierce, the Senate President, myself, actually put out a joint statement, you know, condemning obviously what had happened and talking about, you know, kind of just trying to start a new era of politics. And unfortunately, that was about the last time the Senate President was willing to work with Democrats.
So you've tried and we have tried.
We've tried and you know, Senator Pierce and I actually have a pretty good relationship and had offices next to each other in my first 2 years. And so we work well together on a personal level. We don't agree on a heck of a lot. And unfortunately, the Senate President has decided to not really work with any Democrat too much this year. It's an interesting time in this country and specifically in this state, given kind of the metamorphosis we've been going through the last few years. And I think it's unfortunate because I don't think that this legislature or really the leadership in this state right now is really representative of Arizona. certainly we are a Republican state by registration. Republicans have a registration advantage. Really, we're an independent
state. Not by much.
Frankly, independents by the next election. There will be more independents than there will be Republicans or Democrats. But Republicans have a registration advantage in the state. I acknowledge that. I acknowledge there's more Republicans that vote in each and every election in the state. So I guess it kind of makes sense that we have, 21 Republicans and 9 Democrats. I think it's more a function of the maps than anything, but it makes sense that there's a Republican majority. What I think is unfortunate is that the Republican leadership in the state, the folks who run the state capitol and the woman who runs the 9th floor, which is the governor's office in Arizona, they are not really representative of the average Republican even. And so, unfortunately, we have people who are really at the extreme who are running things in Arizona. And again, I just don't think that they are truly representative of the average Arizonan or even the average Republican at this point. And so what's interesting is they're also so extreme that they're really unwilling to work with people who aren't at that level of extreme. And that includes other members of their own party. I mean, you look at some of the more reasonable and in Arizona, we would call them moderate Republicans who serve in the legislature. And they were kind of discarded and threatened. Directly threatened on the floor of the Senate this year. We had a Republican in the Senate who's one of the people who's at the extreme, probably one of the more extreme, who actually told other members of the legislature to sit down and shut up. And he said it into his microphone on the floor of the Senate, people who just simply disagreed with him on the budget.
That's not going to help matters.
Unfortunately, no, it's not. It's not going to help matters. And unfortunately, that vitriol is still there, and if not more so than before.
All right. Well, we're going to have to let you go at this point so we can bring on Representative Smith, who I think has a different opinion on some things, and hear from his side of the table. Thank you for being with us. All right,
Dennis, thanks for having me. It's been a real pleasure. Thank you.
Take care. Good luck. All right. Well, Wayne, do we have a representative on the phone? Good. Representative Smith, are you with us?
I'm with you.
Okay. I don't know if you heard any of that.
I heard it, and I got it ears full.
What's that?
I said my ears were full.
Oh, your ears were full of it. They're hurting.
Full of it, and they were burning.
Oh, they're burning. Okay. Well, why don't why don't we start with that, if you don't mind? We'll get into your background and who you are in a second. But just for the listening audience, we have David Burnell Smith on, who's a member of the House of Representatives of our esteemed state. And, Dave, before we get into your interesting background, just to follow up on that point of the Senate Minority Leader who is with us here in the studio, who just walked out. What do you think about that topic in terms of, representatives in the House working with one another? How do you see that?
I see it this way. There's a definite disagreement as to policy based upon the principles of the Democratic Party versus the Republican Party. Democrats always, their basic premises, and why we don't get along is they want to spend, and tax. And the Republicans' philosophy, and I think it's almost universal, and I disagree with him that the people in the legislature are more conservative than the people out in the that vote, because they voted us in. I mean, we have a conservative legislature here, but most of them are conservative in the House and the Senate. But I think we pretty much, at least I think, I represent the views of my district in most every aspect. And I believe that the people, even though...
Do you work closely with the Democrats in the House to try to bring consensus?
Let me tell you, there's no consensus with the Democrats because they have not brought one legitimate, bona fide proposal to the leadership in the House. Kurt Adams has said, I beg these people to come up with concrete proposals to the problems we have in the state, and they don't do it. It's good to be critical, but you must have answers. If you don't have answers, then you got to go with the people who've got answers. We had the answers. Look what we did. We balanced the budget first time in 5 years, and that was a miracle. Every other year, we had rollovers, smoke and mirrors, and borrowing money. When I went in there, I said, we're not going to borrow any money. We're not going to have rollovers. We're going to have a true balanced budget, and that's what we did this year. We said we're going to get a jobs bill. We got a jobs bill. So I think we've made pensions reform. I mean, we've done some things that Democrats had a chance to come in and say we want to help. They haven't helped. They're very negative about what we've done. They want to be critical, but criticism's fine, but let's have an alternative, and we haven't seen it.
All right, well, let's talk about who you are. I know that you probably don't remember it, but we met a long time ago in a courtroom in City Court, I think it was. I used to be the chairman of the Planning Commission out of your neck of the woods in Cave Creek.
Creek. Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, and you've had an interesting background. I want to talk about it for a minute. You threw your hat into the ring of elective politics in 1994, as I understand it, and lost your first election, right?
I did. J.D. Hayworth. We became good friends, along with my friend David Schweikert, who and I became great friends, been friends ever since with both of those individuals.
Yeah, and then apparently, as you say, that didn't discourage you. You ran for the Senate in 1998 and lost. You ran again for the same seat in 2000 and lost. You ran in 2002 and lost, and that still didn't discourage you. You're a man of perseverance, apparently.
Well, let me tell you, the first race, nobody gave me a chance against Randall Gannett, and we lost by only a few hundred votes. And the next time we ran, I was ahead of Randall, would have beat him, but he joined his efforts with Carolyn Allen in District 28 at that point, and he won out a small victory for me. And then the next year we had the next time I ran, we were in a new district. We're in District 7, and that I think that hurt me. If the district would remain pretty much as it was, I think I would have beat Jim Waring. But once again, Jim Waring and I became good friends, and the next election after that, I won.
Yeah, and so you are a lawyer, is that right? You went to Baltimore, University of Baltimore, and you were paid to go to law school by Gulf, is that right?
Well, they gave a tuition grant. I got all my law fees and books paid for by Gulf Oil after, you know, they would reimburse me through all my expenses as long as I passed all my courses, which I did very well, so I had that reimbursed.
And, of course, I think our listeners can detect in David Brunell Smith a little bit of an accent. You're from Appalachia, West Virginia, right?
Charleston, West Virginia, yes. I was born and went to public schools there. I graduated from high school there, went on to college, graduated from there, then went to University of Baltimore Law School. After high school, I went to the Coast Guard Reserves and did that for about 8 years, and served in the reserves.
And then you went to Colorado, is that right?
Yes, I went to Colorado and passed the bar there, passed the bar in Maryland, and then I had an opportunity to go to Colorado, which I did, and my wife had gone back there. She was originally from Colorado, and I started my law practice out there and stayed there for about 10 years and then had an opportunity to come to Arizona and came here.
We're talking to David Brunell Smith, who's the representative from the, I guess, Cave Creek, Phoenix, and part of Scottsdale. Is that right?
Yes. It's northeast Phoenix, northwest Scottsdale, Cave Creek, Carefree.
And as I understand it from looking at your bio, you're described as a fierce proponent of liberty, opposing the imposition of onerous mandates on cities and towns. Is that right?
Well, I don't like mandates of any sort, whether it comes from states or it comes from the federal government to the states, or it comes from the states to the cities, from the state to the cities. I think there should be it's a little bit different from the state to cities, because cities are created by the states, whereas our states are independent of the federal government, and we have a federalism, which gives us certain state rights under the Constitution.
And before we take our break, it's my understanding you've been in the movies. Is that right?
I was in about three movies in my career, yeah.
Now, how'd that happen?
I had a good friend who did some producing out there, and we did a movie called Dead Girls Don't Tango, and it was about a projectionist, and I was a projectionist for a certain time when I was in high school, and the director of the movie, John Carr, he was a projectionist, and the executive producer had been a projectionist, and the movie about a projectionist, so I just stepped right in, and he found that out. He says, I'm going to cast you as one of the detectives in the movie, so I got that role.
That's fantastic. Well, we're going to take
I did a movie with Sonny Liston, Moonfire, and I just played a hitchhiker in that one. Then I did Legends of the West with Jack Palance.
Fascinating. We're going to come back to that with David Brunell Smith, member of the House of Representatives, and talk about some issues in a few minutes. This is Dennis Wilenchek. This is Legalese and KFNX.
Since 1991, the law offices of Willinchek & Bartness have provided quality business litigation service that you'd find at a big firm with small firm atmosphere. Willinchek & Bartness specialize in cases of breach of contract, real estate litigation, construction defect, business fraud, and breach of fiduciary duty. For professional yet very personal legal representation, call Willinchek & Bartness today at 602-606-2810, 602-606-2810.
Start saving money today. BYOBudget.com is a simple web-based system that lets you build your own customized budget, helping you eliminate debt. With BYOBudget.com, there are no books to read, no personal information necessary, and no salesmen or hidden fees, just using the money you have. This advanced technology helps you save time and money, creating a budget for personal or business use no matter your age or your income. It's just $7.95 a month. That's 26 cents a day. Budget wisely. Save money. BYOBudget.com. That's BYOBudget.com.
Coming up this week on The Kevin Trudeau Show.
The creator of Breitbart.com, Andrew Breitbart himself, stops by to expose the inside politics within the media and why you are absolutely not getting the truth. Plus, find out why it's so imperative to own gold to ensure protection for your future.
Sundays from noon to 3 p.m. on News Talk Radio 1100, KFNX.
It's the biggest Sesame Street Live show yet. It's the most fun you'll have with your family this year. It's Sesame Street Live, Elmo's Healthy Heroes. Join Elmo, Abby Cadabby, and all of your children's favorite Sesame Street friends as they help Super Grover find his superness. You loved Sesame Street Live when you were a child, and now your children will love it too. Don't miss Sesame Street Live, Elmo's Healthy Heroes.
Playing the Comerica Theater April 29th through May 1st. Tickets start at $12 and are on sale now at the box office and through Ticketmaster.
This is Dennis Willinchek, and we're back on Legalese every Wednesday from 4 to 5 leading into the Lou Dobbs Show. We have with us Representative David Burnell Smith this week. We had Senator David Shapiro on earlier, who is the minority leader of the Senate. David Burnell Smith, because you're both named David, I have to say, I noticed a couple of interesting things about you in doing a little research. Apparently you were invited to the presidential inauguration of Ronald Reagan in 1981. Is that right?
I was.
And you have an interesting story to tell about that, do you not? My understanding is that you were kind of concerned self-conscious about being in a morning suit and wearing black Yale cowboy boots until you saw the president. Is that right?
Yeah. Well, my good friend John Fitzpatrick, he was Holly Kouros's nephew, said to me, he says, you know, we must wear a morning suit because everybody in the audience will have a morning suit on because, you know, this is an inauguration.
Right.
So we went out, both of us rented it, and they were going to put patent leather shoes on me. I tell you truthfully, Dennis, I've never worn patent leather shoes in my life. But I had a nice pair of cowboy boots, which were ill.
And they were shined.
And they're shiny, and they look very nice. So I go there with my morning suit, and he goes there with his morning suit. And I look around, and I said, John, I don't see any morning suits here. I said, you and I were standing out like a sore thumb. And then up on the stage comes Ronald Reagan, morning suit with cowboy boots on. And then George Bush comes on. He had a morning suit. And the only two other people in the place that had morning suits were John and me.
They thought you were being sworn in, I guess.
Yeah. And I sat right next to who was it now? Holly Kouros is one of her, Holly Kouros' best friends. The lady that used to dance with Fred Astaire. Ginger Rogers. And she sat right next to me, and I went up to her and walking toward. And I said, "Hi, are you Ginger Rogers?" And she said, "Yes, I am." And I said, "Gosh, I've seen all your old movies." And of course, I really hadn't, but I just sat down. So I walked in and. It was Holly Kouros in the front row with her friends, and then Ginger Rogers, and I sat right next to with Ginger Rogers. I had a nice conversation with her during the inauguration.
Oh, that's a great story. And then real quickly, another story that I read was that apparently you went in to see a judge in Peoria one day. The judge wasn't there. You asked where the judge was, and they said they don't have one. You want to be one? Is that a true story?
That's a true story. I went in and I said, let me see the judge, and she said, well, he just retired. We don't have a judge here. And she said it was Tony Stevenson. She was clerk. She said, "You want to be our judge?" I said, "Yes, I will." And I've done a little bit of judging then. I've been a pro tem in Wickenburg before. So next thing I knew, they took me in the city attorney's office and
swore you in.
Talked to me and signed me up and swore me in. And next week, I was a judge.
Oh, that's a great story. Well, let me ask you this. We've got a few minutes left here, and I want to get your take on turning to a more serious topic. I want to get your take on this whole clean elections dispute because you, of all people, have a unique perspective. In 2004, you ran, you won, you were victorious finally after all those times that we talked about, and then unfortunately you had to resign your seat. Is that right?
I did.
Tell our listeners what happened there, because many people...
I'll give you a brief synopsis.
Sure.
It's really a miscarriage of justice. What it was, my accountant and I sat down when we filed our financial works, paperwork, and it looked like after the election that I had overspent my budget about $9,000. And in reality, it turns out we didn't. So I went down to Clean Elections that day, and I said, "Here's the figures. I think we might have overspent my budget." So I filed a letter with them, explained to them what I thought happened, and they made a deal with me to say, "Okay, you pay a $2,500 fine, and you're good to go. That's your punishment." I said, "Okay." I brought a check in for $2,500. Next thing I knew, it was Attorney General was involved, and the Clean Election Institute was involved, and they were recommending that they investigate me and try to kick me out of office. So that was the start of it when I had agreement with them. I had a signed agreement that had not been accepted by Clean Elections Committee. And the Attorney General got involved, and then the governor got involved, and I didn't really have much of a chance after that. But I never even got a real hearing because what happened, we wrote a check to Constantine for for $9,000 when it should have only been $6,000. So that was $3,000 we overspent. He paid that money back, and we gave it back to Clean Elections. And secondly, we said we're short $3,000 on the basis that we didn't count some pre-election money that had come in, didn't get recorded on the financial statement. So that was the $6,000 they used to kick me out of the race. And the judge said we didn't file our appeal on time, so we never got a hearing. It was 3-2 in the Court of Appeals, and the Supreme Court would deny my stay, so I had no choice but to resign. So I resigned.
So you resigned,
I was never removed from office. I just was denied a stay, and therefore I didn't resign my office.
So then in 2006, you did not win, but then you came back in 2010 and won. Is that right?
That's correct.
Now,
I was number one in the primary with the 25% of the vote, and I think a field of seven people. So we did real well, and I think people saw my name, and they knew that I got a raw deal, and they want to give me a second chance to come back.
Well, let's talk about Clean Elections. Tell us your position then on Clean Elections based on that unique experience you had. What's your position on it?
Well, my position is, and my position was in 2004, I didn't like Clean Elections. I should have never taken state money because it's against my...
I take it in 2010 you didn't run on Clean Elections, right?
No, of course not.
Yeah.
I ran on my own money.
Right.
And all the other elections that we've talked about that you mentioned, I ran on my own money. But I got some bad advice, and somebody suggested you go ahead and use the Clean Elections money. And so I signed up for it and used it. But I don't like you taking money from the state and use it to pay for politicians' campaigns. It just doesn't sit right with
me. Well, I mean, the people that are for it say...
Was you going to get bit, and I got bit.
Yeah, but the people that are for it say that it's a chance to even the playing field and get people involved in politics who otherwise might not get involved or be able to get involved. And the big hot topic now, of course, as we talk with David Shapira, is this matching fund issue, which is a hot topic. What's your position on that?
Well, I think the Court of Appeals said it, and I think the Supreme Court's going to say it, according to what I say. There's going to be no matching funds because it's, as the Supreme Court's going to say, it's a violation of free speech because if you put more money in it, your people who are running against you, if you got a primary and you got two other people running a clean election, you put in $5,000, they get matching funds of $5,000, so that means $10,000 against your $5,000. So
well, there's really no reason to run traditionally then if there is matching funds. Would you agree? I mean, what's the point of it? You just go out and hustle and get all this money, and then other people can just match it without doing anything. So it seems to me that there's no incentive to run traditionally.
It deters people from renting traditionally, and that's what the court, I think the Supreme Court's going to say. And you should be able to rent if you want to use your own money. But the problem is that limits you what you're going to spend. You know, if you spend it, if you raise it, they get matching funds. So,
but on the other hand, as David Shapiro said, it's not, you know, the issue is it public money or not? And he's saying it's not taxpayer dollars as such. What's your position on that one?
Well, they get it from parking tickets and other sources, which is really, we go into the troughs of the state one way or the other. I mean, and besides, I don't think Clean Election spends the money very well. Every time I turn around, they got an ad on TV saying all of Clean Election, what all they're doing for people, and that's costing the money. So, no, I think I think the new legislation that we passed that goes to the voters, I think we'll see if the voters will take a second look at Clean Elections. I think they'll take a second look and say we don't need Clean Elections.
Well,
there's never been a shortage of people running for office.
Yeah, well, that's what I was going to say. It hasn't stopped anybody in that sense. Still run.
I'm the prime example of somebody that wants to do public service that's going to continue until they win.
All right, David, we have about a minute left, so tell me in that minute what topics you're looking to work on in the next session for the benefit of the public.
Well, I got my bill and probate accomplished this year, but we got some changes to make. We want to look at the clean and convincing evidence with the probate courts next year, and we got to make some changes in the DOI laws that got changed this time. And we have to remember this. We have to go on a budget with an idea that we're going to continue to balance the budget and try to encourage jobs in the state. Do whatever we can to do it and make sure that we are business friendly and get more corporations moving here and keep taxes low.
All right. Well, keep up the good work, my friend. We appreciate having you on. We'll have you on again.
Okay, Dennis. Thank you, sir.
Yeah, take care. This is Dennis Wilenchek on Legal Ease. We'll see you next week, Wednesday from 4 to 5. Look forward to it.
You're invited to a wine tasting with souvenir glass and food and wine pairings. It's the 33rd annual Blessing of Sonoyta Vineyards Festival in Elgin on Saturday, April 30th. Admission is $15, which includes wine tastings, food pairings, winery tours led by the winemaker, and vineyard tours. Horseback riding is also available, as well as lunch from two local Sonoyta restaurants. Call Sonoyta Vineyards, 520-455-5893, and ask about the festival on April 30th. That's 520-455-5893.
Please join me, University of Arizona Athletic Director Greg Byrne, as we tour the state and your community. We're kicking off another great season of Arizona Athletics, and we know we have a lot of supporters all around the state.
We'll be at the Biltmore Golf Tournament on Friday, April 29th at 5:30 p.m. Join Athletic Director Greg Byrne, Coaches Sean Miller, Mike Stoops, and Nia Butts with Arizona football schedules and posters, prices, and refreshments. The cost is $20 for alumni members and $30 for non-alumni members. Join Arizona Athletics and the University of Arizona Alumni Association in Road Trip 2011. Everyone is invited.
This is Arizona's News Talk Leader, KFNX 1100 Cape Creek, Phoenix. News Talk Leader, a division of Premier Radio Stations, LLC. It's 5 o'clock.